Blog Talk Radio.
And away we go. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Paragon Radio. I'm your host, as always, Pogo Man. We're broadcasting live from the twin super cities of Paragon and Millennium Cities and we're broadcasting directly from the Paragon Radio News Station satellite at a high orbit of 0.006 feet above sea level. Think about that one. Much to celebrate tonight. We'll get into that in a moment. But first, my co-host. Some people say he's mad. Some people say he's a Viking. We just like to call him Mad Viking.
Hey, what's the matter, you?
Hey, forget about it. Happy Columbus Day, Indigenous People Day. Canadian Thanksgiving, I heard, was today. I don't know. I didn't live up there. Sorry. Happy Thanksgiving to all our Canadian neighbors north of the border or north of the wall if this was Westeros. Think about that one. Yes.
Oh, I should have sent you that
and
song.
And there's one more. And there's one more.
I should have sent you the song.
Oh, and happy 10th anniversary to Paragon Dawn, our own super group.
Yep. We made it. The trials and tribulations.
That's right. Through the ups and downs, we survived 10 years somehow. All the Dawn Cons, Talk Like Pirate Day, whatever other festivities we've had.
I'm kicking myself. I should have sent you the song.
That's the motto for you. Such a nice face. Ah, shut up. Yes, you should have. But anyway.
Well,
tonight
not that
on WWE,
one. Not that one. We got to go.
All right. What?
We had to go full Bugs Bunny.
Ow. shit it.
No.
With this shutting
up. Hatsamata. Hey, Hatsamata for you.
Hey.
You give me the ravioli and the little I give you cacciatore and something that good to do. But if you know I like it, hey, that's the matter for you.
Well, there you go. We didn't need it. You just sang it. And
yeah.
In WWE tonight in Brooklyn, it's the 25th anniversary of D-Generation X.
Mm-hmm.
The Bloodline is coming out right now. Later on, the four members of DX will be there because Billy Gunn is working for AEW. So he will not be in WWE tonight.
Well, three, if we're not counting Billy Gunn.
No, there's four. What three?
Well, let's see. Triple H.
You're forgetting somebody.
You know, hold on. I'm getting it. Triple H.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
The Heartbreak Kid.
Shawn Michaels. Right, Shawn Michaels, right?
The New Age Outlaws.
That would be four, but okay, so the Road Dogg is there. You forgot one.
Yeah, I was getting to X-Pac, yeah. But
he's there. That's four.
But isn't X-Pac also, not X-Pac, Road Dogg part of the AEW backstage now?
No, he's part of the NXT. Backstage.
Oh, okay.
As far as I know Billy Gunn is part of the
AEW. But it's safe to say we're not going to get the full membership.
Right. Well, technically two members. One deceased, China, and Billy Gunn. So, but they have some kind of special T-shirt for D-Generation X tonight. It says Brooklyn D-Generation. I have my DX shirt on that I got during the 25th anniversary of Raw. They brought it back out.
Mm-hmm.
On the back it says, we got two words for you, get raw, with a 25 on it. So, not the two words you were expecting.
Well, we could also
but
go
I gotta
look
check
up.
Out. Yeah, that's how many times? Oh, my God. How many times do you get people with that one? Still, my favorite DX moment, and it's not on Peacock. When they spoofed and satirized the Nation of Domination.
And I ain't going to make it.
No, but you remember that one, right?
Oh, I remember it. It ain't going to make it, but I remember it.
I've heard it's on YouTube. And
it's on YouTube.
Oh, my God. Yeah. It won't make it on Peacock. It would have been on the WWE Network, but it won't make it on Peacock.
It won't make it on TV. No.
Well, maybe IFC. Because they don't care what they show. I mean, they show the original Blazing Saddles unedited, so.
In a way that it should be, because I've actually seen on YouTube people doing first reaction watching Blazing Saddles, and
right.
Of all kinds of races, You know, at first,
right.
You know, that those first few moments where they're building the story, you get that look.
Right.
Up, like, hana, 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 and then
right.
you get
and then after
to
a while,
the rest
realize,
of it.
Right. The race gets screwed over by the good guy. Right. And that's the point
yeah.
of it, though. And it's depicting the time. You know, like when Bill Cosby fought the Little Rascals, he didn't allow it to be shown on TV at all. But at the point when we watched it, it was edited. I have a DVD box set of the Little Rascal episodes. Oh, my God, the stuff that we never saw on TV.
Well, I think we did in the early 70s.
Maybe early 70s, but towards the later 70s. No, there was a thing where they put on a play, and all the white kids were in blackface.
I actually remember that. It was on WPIX in, okay. in Brooklyn.
Really? Well, WPIX
yeah.
in Long Island didn't show that. They didn't show that. They cut that scene out. I don't know why.
Oh, it's the same WPIX.
I know. I don't know. I don't remember that, though, or I didn't see that episode back then. But I remember the episode. Then there was one where Spanky's talking to a Chinese kid, and he goes, wash your clothes. I was like, oh, my God.
Yep.
This is on the DVD.
Oh, yeah.
This isn't on TV. You know, nowadays, like, what did he say?
You'd be lucky enough to hear the tune of the Little Rascals nowadays.
Well,
you know,
what's funny
hear
is on Instagram, they have somebody has Little Rascal moments, and every day they put a different clip up. When I was working at Verizon, one of our favorites was when they were on the fire truck, and Stymie's on the back of it, and it spins, or the back end folds, and he's looking at the driver, and I forget who's driving, but he looks at him and goes, I don't know where we're going, but we're on our way.
The best classic line from Stymie is going like, "I don't know about Artie, but this ain't gonna choke. This ain't gonna choke Stymie." Talking about an artichoke after he peels it all the way down to the end.
Oh, right. I like the one. We ain't babies. We is fidgets.
You
had to see that one. I think they were trying to get in something like a haunted house or something like that. So anyway,
go ahead.
I was going to say, let's get into the show. I mentioned Werewolf by Midnight. I watched it
right.
last night late. You got to watch with the lights off. It's very reminiscent of the Universal monster movies. And it's in black and white up until the very end. With like a minute or two left, it goes to color. When it's daylight out. I think that was kind of cool how they did that. Just not a spoiler. It's just, and there's a song that plays, and you're going, oh, I bet they're going to colorize it now. And as soon as they start playing the song, they go to color. I could tell you the song because it pretty much has nothing to do with the movie. It's Somewhere Over the Rainbow from The Wizard of Oz, which was black and white, and then they colored it. You know? So I'm sitting there going, as soon as they start doing, like, oh, what, they're going to change color, and all of a sudden slowly the something changes the color, and then everything, then the whole screen goes to color from black and white. But the black and white was very effective.
Like how you were describing it, I was kind of expecting you to say like Barry Manilow or something.
No. It was just, and I'm going to say this, Man Thing, I thought was a cameo in it. He plays the main part in the story. So,
So
you see a lot of him, and they did a great job. I don't think it's CGI. I think it's an actual costume. I wouldn't be surprised if it was an actual costume they used for it, but. Top-notch job. Great for, they put it out just in time for Halloween. It was R-rated for violence. And, yeah, it was in black and white, so you don't see the blood, you know. It's black and white blood. It doesn't count like real blood, right? Yeah, you know, I thought they were going to do like the Sin City treatment, like the blood will be red on the black and white. But no, it was all black and white until the very end. And that's all I'm going to say about that. I don't want to give any more spoilers. It was just a lot of fun to watch. Silver Girl says, Hunter and Sean need to ride the tank into AEW and save Billy Gunn from the competition. Save him. He's in a main storyline right now.
His sons are part of the stars.
Well, he's not with them now. There's a feud. And Billy Gunn says, right. Yes.
Yeah, but
right. They're in the main thing.
Right. All right. Anyway.
Oh, yeah.
I wasn't paying attention. I just poofed out of COH. I want to check your tune.
See, you're worried about me. No, I'm good.
All right.
See, so worried about me. You poofed. That sounds so wrong. But. So I heard some weird. So I'm behind by a month or two on the happenings with the X-Men. And I read this article this morning in Physical Therapy, and I got such a spoiler for an issue that's out or coming out, and they were talking about the Sins of Sinister storyline coming out soon.
Mm-hmm.
And they were showing a cover. There's going to be three new titles for that one. Storm and the Brotherhood is one. And I don't want to get into it.
Looks like the 90s is back. Everything is becoming X.
Yes, yes. Well, it's a storyline that's been building, and they've been teasing, if you follow the whole Krakoa, Jonathan Hickman era of X-Men, it's been building to this moment. It's been building to this, so.
Yeah, but like I said, those who remember the 90s, everything had to have an X.
Well, not only that, if another company used an X in their title, they got sued.
Mm-hmm.
Who was it? X?
That one Stan and Lou episode, if I'm, you know, the general
right.
said anything to do with X-Men, I had the lawyer's theme play out. I remembered that one.
right. But I can't remember the name of this X. I can't remember the title of it. It was something with X in the title. Had nothing to do with Marvel. Marvel tried to sue them saying, we have a copyright on the letter X. They said, oh, really? They took it to court without Marvel, got an injunction. You know, they tried to get an injunction by the court. For some reason, they couldn't get it because it turns out, and the people who made the other comic book got a letter. Marvel might have X in a lot of their titles, but they do not have a copyright on a letter of the alphabet. You cannot trademark that. Therefore, they can use the name. And
Paragon,
I think the judge went on to say,
Paragon Dawn X.
Here we go. That should be I was thinking that should be like a strike force. Paragon Dawn X. I think you should put the hyphen between Dawn and X, though. Because otherwise it looks like Dawn 10, if you're reading Roman numerals. Like for years, we thought he was Weapon X. And he goes, no, you're Weapon 10.
So does that make Boop Lockheed?
Yeah, I don't know who's Lockheed he is, but he would be Lockheed.
Lockheed the Dragon of Kitty Pryde?
Yes, I know. I said, I don't know whose pet he would be in Paragon Dawn. That's what I said.
Oh.
I know who Lockheed is.
Okay.
I know who he is. Trust me. I've been reading X-Men since 1984. 84? Yeah. The summer Ghostbusters came out. That's when I started, late summer, fall, whatever.
I still remember when I started getting comics, it was the Dark Phoenix saga.
See,
I had all of them.
That was a great time. I didn't get
and
into, my first.
When I moved, and when I was a kid, and we moved from Brooklyn to Florida, guess what the parents did?
Tell me they threw them all out.
All right, I won't tell you. They threw them all out.
Oh, my God. I would kill. See, I have comic books. I have my X-Men collection from 84. I started with issue 190. It was an age undreamed of. It was a two-parter. I thought that was pretty cool, and I was hooked. And then I realized in the basement my dad had some comic books. He had one. I don't know why. A friend of his was trying to get rid of comic books cheap. He had, like, Dazzler, the whole series, She-Hulk, the whole series from the 70s.
Well, I take that back. It wasn't just the Dark Phoenix. It was also the Rise of the Phoenix, because I remember the first comic I got was Phoenix coming out of the ocean in the green suit.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that
that's
one.
The very first. That's the very beginning. Wow, and that was 1970.
Yeah, and then
yeah. See, the only comic books like I could get were like if my dad brought them home, and in the middle of the Dazzle there was the X-Men. I asked him for years, "Can you pick this up for me?" Well, no, no. Like, why not? You're buying everything else. Or he wasn't buying everything else. He would buy like Spider-Man, because he was on TV. I'm like, great. I think because of this, I have a hatred for Spider-Man. The movies are great, but the comic book I can't read. I have a bunch of old ones, but I just can't get into it.
It's once they got rid of the Peter Parker MJ marriage, I was like, no. No.
Oh, when they do that?
Brand New Day? More Day?
One More Day? Really?
Or something like that. When they broke them, you know, basically what happened was it was after Civil War. Peter Parker showed himself to be Spider-Man. Kingpin hired someone and was supposed to kill Peter Parker, but shot Aunt May.
Okay, I think
Peter
I remember
Parker
hearing about that. Right,
made a deal with Mephisto, says, okay, she'll be back, but your marriage goes. It's too perfect.
And he accepted
said,
that.
Yes, he did.
Wow.
I said, well, that's the last one for me. Thank you.
Well, what's funny is that Heroes, the thing with the Squadron Supreme were the main heroes on Earth. That whole thing? Did you read that series? And the big twist at the end? Mephisto was behind the whole thing? Because wasn't Agent Coulson, he wanted to be president? He wanted to have all the power or something like that? He made a deal with the devil. I was like, Coulson. I was like, how can they do that to Coulson? Coulson would never do that. At least
all
the movies.
Well, they got their exercise out of the Cosmic Cube when they went, all right, we're going to make Captain America Steve Rogers a Hydra agent. Oh,
right.
Damn. Maybe we shouldn't
yes.
do that. Here,
yes.
Cosmic Cube, that'll fix it.
Well, yeah, they had to go find it to undo it. Right, they had to put it back in or something like that. Two different storylines, but still.
You know, you remember, I was thinking the same. You watch, they're going to put in something like a Cosmic Cube. Bing!
And that's, yep. And it was some girl put him in there and changed history. For some reason.
The girl was the Cosmic Cube.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Yes, yes, yes. But it was because of the fact that Steve Rogers' mother died when he was young or something like that, or... So it was just weird. It was just...
It was like before Marvel was known as the, you know, the house of stories, and now it's the
house of ideas.
Oh my God, what the hell? House of ideas, and now it's going like the house of what were you thinking?
Oh yeah, it's funny. Like every time they want to do, let's reboot our universe. And I remember I was at a convention, and an artist said, so the House of Ideas is the House of No Ideas now? Because every, quote-unquote, great idea they come up with falls flat on their face.
Well, I mean, I'll give credit where it's due of the recent ones. Miles Morales is a hit. Kamala Khan is a hit.
Has her own TV show, yes. And it's going to be in Marvel's.
And
Captain
now they
Marvel
changed her, but they changed her powers to match with the movie / the TV.
They should have just left it. I mean, they did it for TV because they couldn't do the effects, the comic book effects. They should have just left it.
If they were able to do it in the 90s for the cult, I'm calling it the cult classic Fantastic Four.
And I still haven't seen that one. But go ahead. Yeah, I know. If they could do it, then, I heard it was cheesy. But they should have been able to do it for TV.
They even did it for Elongated Man in The Flash.
Right. So DC has the tech to do it, but not Marvel? Really? With Marvel's superior cinematic studio, they couldn't come up with a way, you know, oh, we can't do this. Yeah, because DC did it. So DC did it. Don't get me started. It took them how long to figure out they could do, they could, you know, how long did it take both companies to figure out? I mean, we could have a movie with a female lead. Wonder Woman, Scarlett Johansson, Black Widow. I mean, and by that point, it was a prequel.
Mm-hmm. I still remember when they came out with Black Panther. It's like, it's the first, you know, full African-American hero. I said,
go back to the 90s, Blade is looking at you going, what'd you say?
But even then, you know, go like, we casted all African Americans. Well, I hope so. It's set in Africa.
Right.
And you remember my comment. I would have been annoyed. You remember my comment right afterwards. I would have been kind of annoyed if Joe Pesci became the Black Panther. Hey, I'm the freaking Black Panther. What kind of forever?
You talking to me? You talking to me? Huh? Holy shit. All right, Silver Egret says, on the Disney cruise ships, Kamala is an Avenger in training.
Right. That's one of the previous storylines and one of the video games.
Right.
And now she's part of the Champions, which I think that closed out just as successful as the original Champions. For those who don't know who the original Champions were, they were the
Shame
Angels.
On you.
No, it was the 70s, you know.
Right.
So it was
Angel,
Iceman,
Beast, Iceman. Right.
Hercules,
it was three of the five original X-Men.
Hercules and Ghost Rider.
Wasn't Doctor Strange part of it?
No, that's Defenders.
Oh, that's right. Wrong group, sorry. Hmm. Right. So it was the left out,
let's clarify. Johnny Blaze, Ghost Rider.
Right. Correct. So it was basically a left out Avenger. Three of the X-Men got booted. And Johnny Blaze, one of the Midnight Suns.
The Midnight Suns weren't even existing at that point. It was just a way to get Ghost Rider into
Midnight.
The continuity.
Right. Cool.
But
right.
But now it's like it looks like they're going to full reboot on the upcoming thing here on both sides. It's like enough with the reboot.
Were they rebooting now? Defend
both sides.
Champions.
Marvel and DC.
Oh, they're doing reboot.
We're gonna
again?
Have a it's gonna be a reboot battle.
Why? Well, it's not. Well, The Sins of Sinister isn't a reboot. I found out it takes place 10 years in the future.
No, well, you got to get to the main storyline of what's happening now with all of them. That would be
I'm
Avengers, X-Men, Eternals.
Right. A or Axe, AXE. Mm-hmm. I have to read that. I have much to catch up on, and the annoying thing is, if you go with the reading order, I'm missing a few comic books when they mail them to me because I can't get out to my comic book store right now. And I think last month they mailed out a bunch of stuff to me, and they were missing a few issues. So there you go. Sorry, I was just reading something in the Endgame channel. Never mind.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's do roll call.
All right.
With us here, I don't think Sugi's listening, but we do have Reformed Henson dribbling a basketball on the steps of City Hall. in beautiful downtown Atlas Park.
And Wolfie's listening and going like, I have to watch several movies. He's lost.
No, we're talking about the comic. We're talking about the comic books, not the movies. Movies are different. Movies are a different universe than the comic book universe.
Wait for the Doctor Strange and the Madness thing, and then we'll probably start getting a reboot there because they'll be adding in all the Sony stuff.
Well, the last two movies you got that. Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, and the last Spider-Man movie you got the multiverse.
And
No Way Home.
And you got one upcoming. Deadpool 3.
Yes. Yes, because that's going to have Wolverine in it. That'll introduce the mutants officially into the MCU. I think that's how they're going to do it. So far, they just said Hugh Jackman's going to be in it. But
I still say I want to see Deadpool, Howard the Duck, and She-Hulk in the same moment, even if it's an after credits scene. The ultimate
that's what I'll
fourth wall breakers.
That's like 12 walls. The fourth wall breaking a fourth wall breaking a fourth wall. That's Deadpool math. All right, and in the WCOC theaters in Millennium City, along with us, we have a silvery Gret standing on top of the camera. Great Sorcerer Teddy and Alan and the Teddysons, Mr. Nom Nom and Clarence.
Now, for those who remember, we mentioned about Paragon Dawn's anniversary. After this show, I'm going to go live on the air. Go to the Paragon Dawn
Dawn
Radio. On
dawnradio.live. On dawnradio.live.
And then I'll go to the Paragon Dawn base in City of Heroes. I'm going to head to City Hall on Champions because that's where we always have our anniversary, in City Hall there, inside where the globe is.
That's right.
And that was a very significant one. Pogo, I think you were there when we first had the party for the closing anniversary of COH.
Yes. Yes, we did. Because we had no choice. It was either Paragon Chat. Paragon Chat was open. A lot of people showed up there.
No, this was before them.
Oh, before Paragon. Oh, okay, yes.
Yeah, because...
Wait. It was a year anniversary. Right. No, but they had Paragon Chat. Oh, I think before they officially decided to have an anniversary.
The cape was still on Champions. So after they were going to do anything, remember? But once, me, Rain, Brew, and a few others said, hey, we're doing something over here at City Hall. They're like, oh, shit.
That's right. Right. They had to do something. They couldn't. Yeah. That's right. I remember that now. Right. And then for the official anniversaries on Paragon Chat, we would do our show at 10 because I think from 10 to midnight, they didn't have anything set up. And we talked to Herc, and we said, hey, who?
And then Angel hit you. DJ Angel.
Right. Yes. Well, no. We worked it out. We worked it out. I said, you guys are going off the air at 10? They're like, yeah, well, it's like, we don't want to step on any toes. I want to do a talk show. And we had the schedule listed. And they said, fine, we're done by 10. We'll make sure by 10. And we went on from 10 to midnight. And they were cool about it. Back then.
Until.
Right. Yeah, until. But at that point, they said, all right, cool. As a matter of fact, I think I had a couple of them on the show back then. Mm-hmm. I know Herc came on a couple of the, I think one or two of the DJs came on from the Cape.
I still remember this. When Dawn Radio just broke out, we're going to have the, it was the closing anniversary, third year. They said, Cape said, they weren't going to do anything. You went to me and you went, hey, let's do something. I said, yeah, let's do something. All right. Move over here. We get word.
I'm like the death. Go ahead. Yeah.
We get word from two of our friends who are DJs there. They're going, I'm sorry. The Pogo man. He's going like, what are you sorry about?
Go in. It's like, go look at the website. I was like, mother. Puss Buckets. I didn't say Mother Puss Buckets. I said something else. I'm keeping it clean tonight because, you know, I don't know why. But it was just like, sons of bitches. I went to you. I'm like, look at this. I sent you the link. And you pretty much had the same reaction. And we were laughing. It's like, Oh, we were going to be agnostic until another radio station decided to do something, and then we couldn't be shown up.
And then the thing is, they didn't do it on Champions, where there was a whole lot of people who's going, hey, we would have liked Capers to come over here and play for us.
Mm-hmm.
I still remember the confusion of the second one. Now, check this out. Once again, Dawn Radio didn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
He and Pogo are doing the kind thing because there were people that did not want to go to Paragon Chat because either A, their computer couldn't handle it, or B, they just did not want to go there because it's not the game, it's City of Chat.
Right. That's all it was back then. Yeah, that's all it was. And it was a great place for us to do our show. People tuned in.
So
I think at that point,
like, all right,
go ahead.
We will tell people how to tune into the Cape through Champions Online Winamp/iTunes. And we're telling them, hey, we're getting all these people. You know, we're going like, hey, look at this. We're getting these people listening to you. And then I get a tell and he gets a tell from one of the DJs. I think it's rude that you're doing a show here. And it's like, we're not doing a show. And all you keep telling that all your listeners here is that. So let me get this straight. You don't want us to tell people to listen to the Cape, huh? That's what we're doing. We're telling them to get your stream onto the game Winamp/iTunes connection.
Right. We're trying to get you more listeners at this point. That's what we were doing on my show. I'm doing a show promoting your guys, and you're mad we're promoting you.
We weren't even on the air.
You said you weren't doing anything.
We weren't
at
doing
that
it.
Point.
I wasn't even a partner with Pogo Man at this moment. You know, we were both in Paragon Dawn. That's it.
Right.
And
at this point, no. Right. At this point, Tony V was still my co-host, and we're talking. He goes, "Holy shit, really?" I was like, I think he talked them and smoothed things out. But it was like, look, this is what they're doing. This is it. So
I'm going like, those people on Champions, they don't want to come over to Paragon Chat, or they can't come over to Paragon Chat. We're trying to be helpful. Oh.
Wait. Oh. Silver Grit goes, cut the Pogo standing in the bathroom with soap in his mouth. Yes. Luxor soap. And we get the reference?
Yep. So when Dawn Radio became live, Pogo Man goes, hey, how about doing this? Like, yeah, okay.
We can do this. We can do that. I'm like the devil in your ear, man. I just got to give you an idea. It's like, okay. Hey, but Dawn Con's a big hit. I don't care what anybody says.
And they were helping. And yet, you know, oh, God. First 2 years, remember?
Yeah.
What was our biggest year?
The radio station.
Yeah.
The third year.
Yeah. When Dawn Radio started.
Yeah. I think that's funny. So. Anyway. So New York Comic Con was this past weekend. And I apologize because last week I forgot all about it. I didn't realize, you know, it just stuff's been going on here. So it was like, oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot all about that. So I grabbed every the big news stories I could get from the 6th, 7th, 8th, Thursday through Sunday, because that would be New York Comic Con. Not a lot, but, oh, let's start with the first story, shall we?
All right.
This is one of your favorite people going to be in an upcoming movie.
Uh-oh.
Take a guess.
I don't want to.
Trouble Boy. Ezra Miller. Okay, but actually the first thing, because Ezra Miller shot, and I'm like, oh, God, what did he do? More pickups for the Flash last week. I was like, oh, okay. As soon as I saw Ezra Miller shot, I'm like, oh, what the hell did he do now? Anyway, okay, so in the midst of a tumultuous summer, Ezra Miller somehow found the time to appear in reshoots for The Flash. Tumultuous, yes. It's right there. It's a word. And yet, the film, which has been delayed multiple times, is still apparently unfinished. So earlier Thursday, The Wrap stated that Miller once again reported to the set last week. According to the outlet, Miller shot a day of pickups last week, which doesn't sound like it was extensive, but it's still an open question of how much is left to do on the film. Miller has been mired in controversy for months, thanks to multiple run-ins with the law, including an arrest for felony burglary. And after Warner Brothers floated the idea of canceling The Flash, Miller was reportedly contrite during a meeting with Warner Brothers executives in August. Following that meeting, Miller released a statement that read, "I now understand that I am suffering complex mental health issues and have begun ongoing treatment. You just realize this. And I want to apologize to everyone that I have alarmed and upset with my past behavior. I am committed to doing the necessary work to get back to a healthy, safe, and productive stage in my life." Yes, felony burglary is not a normal mental health issue. You're suffering from complex mental health. And yesterday was World Mental Health Awareness Day. On a side note, I just remembered that. But anyway, compared to earlier this year, Miller has been relatively quiet since making that statement, but very serious legal and PR issues remain for the embattled star. A September expose in Vanity Fair suggests that Miller's mental issues are far worse than previously reported. Vanity Fair contends that Miller suffers from, quote-unquote, messiah delusions. If that is true, it signals even bigger problems ahead for both Miller and the studio. And as of right now, The Flash is scheduled to be released on June 20th, 2023. Let's see if that holds up.
Yeah.
All right. In another movie altogether, Kevin Durant has been cast in Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Today has already graced us with a new addition to the Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes cast. I didn't see that story. But now another key role in the sequel has been filled. Deadline is reporting that Kevin Durant is joining the next chapter in the Planet of the Apes saga, the first re-released by 20th Century Studios since its acquisition by Disney. Durant's character remains unconfirmed, but according to Deadline sources, he's playing an ape who will serve as the film's primary villain. Fortunately, Durant already has some experience with playing the bad guy. His resume is brimming with villainous turns in films like X-Men Origins, Wolverine. Yeah, we don't talk about that movie. I Am Number 4, The Mortal Instruments, City of Bones, and DC Universe's short-lived Swamp Thing series. Durant recently starred in Netflix's Lock and Key and has also appeared as a series regular on FX's The Strain. So far, the Kingdom cast includes Owen Teague as lead ape, with Freya Allen also on board as a new human character. Coming aboard the franchise in mystery roles are Peter Macon and Eka Darvill, the latter of whom also joined the call sheet today. Okay, so Eka Darvill is the other one who joined. And she's from Jessica Jones, by the way. Wes Ball is directing the new film from a screenplay by Rise and Dawn of the Planet of the Apes writers Rick Jaffa and Amanda Silver, who are also collaborating with Josh Friedman and Patrick Aysen. The movie picks up several years following the events of 2017's War for the Planet of the Apes and the death of Caesar, Andy Serkis. Ooh. Production on the sequel will reportedly begin sometime this month. And Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes will hit theaters sometime in 2024. Okay, Wakanda Forever news. Joe Pesci has signed to play the new Black Panther. No. I'm kidding. Michelle Cole explains what drew her to Black Panther, Wakanda Forever. Over the last few years, the MCU has gradually become a more inclusive space for LGBTQ representation, with several queer characters. This is what the article says. I'm just reading it. With several queer characters joining its films and TV shows. Next month, another one will make her live-action debut in Black Panther, Wakanda Forever. While speaking with Vogue, Michelle Cole confirmed that her new character in the sequel is queer, much like her comic book counterpart. Okay. Cole's Emmy-winning work on HBO's I May Destroy You makes her one of Wakanda Forever's most prominent new additions. However, her role in the film is significant for a number of other reasons as well. Cole portrays Onika, a revered captain and combat instructor for the Dora Milaje. As fans have seen in the theaters, in the trailers, she stands out by wearing the blue armor of the Midnight Angels. Onika also falls in love with Florence Kasumbo's Ayo, a member of the Dora Milaje, who has been popping up in the MCU since Captain America Civil War hit theaters in 2016. But, as Cole explains, her character's LGBTQ status was the key to securing her involvement. That sold me on the role. The fact that my character's queer, revealed Cole. I thought, I like that. I want to show that to Ghana. Being of Ghanaian descent, Cole is well aware that the country's government has a poor track record when it comes to LGBTQ rights. In fact, its parliament is currently debating a new bill that would pass some of the most oppressive anti-gay laws in African history. Some of these would make identifying as a gay a second-degree felony that is punishable by 5 years in prison. That's why Cole felt embracing Anika's sexuality on screen was an important message to send to her people. People say, oh, it's fine, it's just politics, said Cole. But I don't think it is just politics when it affects how people get to live their daily lives. That's why it felt important for me to step in and do that Black Manta 2 role, because I know just by me being Ghanaian, Ghanaians will come. And Black Panther Wakanda Forever will hit theaters on November 11th.
Okay.
Hold on a second.
This is an established character. I'm trying to remember all of the Black Panther comics.
Yeah,
I'm,
she's in the comic.
Yeah,
might,
like I said, I'm
in the newer ones.
Okay, newer ones. All right.
Could be. Okay, so Harley Quinn is getting a Valentine's Day special in February 2023. The latest season of Harley Quinn was a bit shorter than previous seasons of the hit animated series, with 10 episodes instead of the usual 13. But, fortunately, viewers won't have to wait until season 4 for more Harley and Ivy. The show just announced plans to release a new Valentine's special in February 2023. According to TV Line, the episode is titled Harley Quinn, A Very Problematic Valentine's Day Special, and will show Harley and Poison Ivy celebrating their very first V-Day as DC's newest power couple. But don't expect them to be the only ones getting some action next year. The official logline promises to reveal how the rest of the ragtag crew spends their gushiest, mushiest, most romantic day of the year. In other words, fans will get to check in on several other DC characters and see whether they spend time with their significant others or strike out and spend the night alone. And the series announcement was from the Harley Quinn Twitter page. I need a new pair of shorts because HBO Max just announced we're getting a Valentine's Day special. It's coming out February 2023, and I need to figure out what to wear and what to get my Valentine. And this smiley face with hearts for eyes. And what we're going to eat. So Kelly Cuoco and Lake Bell will headline the special as Harley and Ivy, respectively. The voice cast also features several other members of the Harley Quinn family, including Alan Tudyk, who plays Joker and Clayface, Matt Oberg as Kite Man, James Wolk as Superman, Natalie Morales as Lois Lane, Chris Diamantopoulos as Aquaman, James Adomain as Bane, Jim Rash as the Riddler, Vanessa Marshall as Wonder Woman, Rachel Dratch as Nora Freeze, and Michael Ironside as Darkseid. New cast members include Janet Varney, Layla Birch, Tyler James Williams, Josh Hellman, and Casey Wilson. However, those characters haven't been revealed yet. And a few other names are noticed.
What, I just thought of it. Bring in Weird Al like they did in Teen Titans Go to play Darkseid.
I know. They should.
Is this is true? Know. It's on YouTube. You have to look at it.
He really did. He was coughing, and he goes, oh, sorry. And he goes, sorry, I got a sore throat. And then his voice comes, that's Weird Al Yankovic. I'm like, that's Weird Al Yankovic. Holy shit, he's doing Darkseid. It was a funny episode. I mean, that was one of the, like, sometimes the show's hit or miss. This was a hit. That was like one of those things I recorded and watched like two more times that night. But a few of the names are noticeably missing from the call sheet, including Ron Funches, who plays King Shark, Christopher Maloney, who is Commissioner Gordon, and J.B. Smoove, Frank the Plant. It's also somewhat odd not to see Diedrich Bader and Sanaa Lathan back as Batman and Catwoman. But since Harley Quinn Season 3 ended, I'm not going to read that. That was a spoiler I didn't want to know yet. We probably won't be checking in on them until Season 4 arrives at an unspecified date in the future. Something happens in the last episode that explains why they're not there. And I'm not going to get into that. Okay,
so
more DC news and more Harley. I have more Harley Quinn news.
Right.
Margot Robbie endorses Lady Gaga as Harley Quinn in Joker 2. So Margot Robbie's portrayal of Dr. Harley Quinzel slash Harley Quinn is one of our favorite parts of the DCEU. However, when Todd Phillips announced that Joker would be getting a sequel, Joker Folie à Deux, it was also revealed Lady Gaga will be co-starring alongside Phoenix in a role likely to be Harley Quinn. Regardless, Robbie is very happy for Gaga and shared her excitement about the sequel in an interview with MTV News. It makes me so happy because I said from the very beginning is all I want is for Harley Quinn to be one of those characters, the way like Macbeth or Batman always gets passed on, said Robbie. From great actor to great actor, it's kind of like someone gets to do their Batman or someone gets to do their Macbeth. And I feel like in not so many cases are they female characters like Queen Elizabeth I, which I got to have a crack at as well. It's such an honor to have built a foundation strong enough that Harley can now be one of those characters that other actors get to have a go at playing. I think she'll do something incredible with it. So despite no official confirmation of Gaga's role, the phrase Folie à Deux means shared madness by two people. This has been speculated to mean that Gaga will play some version of Harley alongside Phoenix's Joker. And the new Joker movie begins production in December, and it's supposed to arrive in theaters on October 4th, 2024.
For some reason, I was kind of waiting to hear Punchline.
Yeah, there were, yeah. Well, Punchline's a newer one, so.
Right.
And we never really established if, you know, like the title says Joker, but there was that ambiguousness, like, is he really the Joker, or is he does he inspire somebody else to be the Joker? Like, he calls himself Joker, you know, in the movie, but, you know, is he actually the one, the Batman villain Joker?
Well, yeah, saying if you're going to
apparently
have,
so.
If you're going to have an origin story, let's make it multiple choice.
Yeah. But apparently, if Harley Quinn's going to be in it, that's Joker. I mean, that's the Joker.
Yeah, that's what I said, you know, yeah, but considering, you know, in the DC movies, they haven't established Harley. That's why I was thinking they may have thrown in Punchline.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. But like you said, other people can play her. Maybe just in this series, Margot Robbie. I guarantee if they do another Suicide Squad movie, Margot Robbie will be back to play Harley Quinn.
And the thing is, you know, they always say, you know, once you hit a certain age, that's it, you're done. I'm going like, no, actually, Margot Robbie can keep going because then you can get old lady Harley.
That we saw in Batman Beyond.
No, there was a in between. The third or the fourth incarnation of the Harley Quinn story on the comics.
Oh, really?
They had old lady, complete with old man Logan, old lady Harley.
Oh, okay, I gotcha. Well, they also did old man Hawkeye, so.
Mhm.
But old man Logan's a more popular one.
Right. But, wait a minute, what's this here? A, B, or 573? And Wolfgang, aren't all psychotic origins multiple choice? Yeah. And Silver, isn't Jack Nicholson? I still say he, live action, he's still my favorite. Cartoon, Mark Hamill.
I like, oh God, your hands down Mark Hamill. And I still say the funniest thing is him reading Darth Vader's lines from Star Wars as the Joker. Well,
I just got this from a friend of mine on Facebook here. Picture the scene of Jurassic Park with the three scientists looking at the dinosaurs. But now I shall put in Neon's Hulu. Hulu releases Hellraiser reboot. What's her name who played the female character? Pinhead. Oh yeah, Hulu's Pinhead is female.
Okay.
Pinhead is a Disney princess.
Oh god.
That's all
somebody
you need now.
That's all you need now.
Is see Pinhead with Aladdin going a whole new world. Fulfilled with pain and pleasure abound. Robin Williams is going like, no, I am out of here.
There you go.
All right.
Okay.
Well, we're getting close to that time.
I got one more.
Okay.
One more DC thing. Pennyworth, season 3. We'll explore the Wayne family's history. So for newcomers to the series, Pennyworth chronicles the backstory of Alfred Pennyworth, the former British Special Forces soldier who will one day become the butler and eventual guardian to Bruce Wayne. Although centered around Alfred, Pennyworth also focuses on Bruce's parents, Thomas Wayne and Martha Kane. Season 3 will also introduce viewers to Patrick Wayne, Thomas's father and Bruce's grandfather. In a new interview with EW, Ben Aldridge, the actor who plays Thomas Wayne, explained how Season 3 will dive into the history of the Wayne family and Thomas's relationship with Patrick. It's a bit of foreshadowing of what we know is Thomas and Bruce's dynamic, that cold, awkward father-son relationship, said Aldridge. We learn a bit of family history there, and their interplay is very tense. Thomas is on the straight and narrow this season. He's a family man and pediatrician, and then Patrick arrives and tries to re-embroil him in dark matters and succeeds, kind of. So heading into Season 3, Pennyworth experienced a few key changes. The show moved from Epics, thank God, to HBO Max for the third season. And you can watch Season 1 and 2 there. I haven't watched them yet, but the first two seasons are there every episode. Also, the series will now be called Pennyworth, The Origin of Batman's Butler. See, I liked it better when it was just Pennyworth. I don't like this ridiculous title. Creator Bruno Heller revealed that HBO Max pushed for the subtitle in order to establish its connection to Batman. Right, because no one knows Alfred Pennyworth is Batman's butler. Mm-hmm.
It's an unknown.
HBO Max did their research. Yeah, it's, hold on. HBO Max did their research, and they discovered a fair few people who had watched and enjoyed the first few seasons of Pennyworth, but had not realized it was about Batman, noted Heller. They just thought it was about a bloke who left the army. Oh, good Lord. Okay, they did have to do it. The first three episodes of Pennyworth, The Origin of Batman's Butler, Season 3, they are now available on HBO Max. Okay. So it's there, but just seriously, Pennyworth, Alfred Pennyworth, the Waynes, Wayne Mansion, stately Wayne Mansion, that didn't connect these people.
Somewhere Jeff Foxworthy's going like, even a fifth grader knew that one.
Don't.
All right, well, we're getting up to the time.
Hold on.
Hold
on. All right, let me do one more. I just found this one. So HBO Max's Penguin series lands Mayor of Easttown director Craig Zobel. Before the Batman 2 arrives, DC fans will revisit Matt Reeves' grimy version. Let me try that again. DC fans will revisit Matt Reeves' grimy vision of Gotham City in a standalone series focusing on Colin Farrell's Penguin. The show will reportedly examine Oswald Cobblepot's rise to power, with Farrell reprising his role from The Batman. Now, it sounds like the producers have enlisted a capable director who knows a thing or two about crime dramas. According to Discussing Film, Craig Zobel is in talks to direct several episodes of The Penguin for HBO Max. Zobel's work as a director and one of the executive producers behind HBO's Mayor of Easttown earned him two nominations at last year's Emmy Awards. His relationship with the network also extends to other HBO shows, with directing credits on The Leftovers and Westworld. Zobel has some impressive feature credits to his name as well, including Compliance, which he also wrote, and Z for Zachariah. He most recently directed The Hunt, which hit theaters in 2020. The Penguin's producers are hoping to start production of the series in early 2023, but this time Zobel is figuring out the schedule to see just how many episodes he can direct. when filming begins. Once his deal goes through, he will also serve as an executive producer on the show with Reeves and Dylan Clark. In addition to headlining the spinoff, Farrell will act as an executive producer as well. Now, a spinoff featuring Farrell's character has been in the works for over a year. However, HBO Max didn't announce a series order until this past March, less than a week after The Batman hit theaters. Lauren LeFranc of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is spearheading the project as showrunner and executive producer. Her show is also one of two Batman offshoots currently in development for the small screen. The other series will reportedly focus on Arkham Asylum. HBO Max hasn't announced a release date for The Penguin, but if it begins filming next year, then a 2024 release seems likely. Okay. HBO Max has some projects. They aren't doing the Batgirl movie, but they're going to do some other Batman-related stuff. Did I say that out loud?
Yeah. All right.
I know. We covered that already.
Yep. As we
yes, I'm getting, are I'm getting,
getting... We have to ask the
intern
question.
Bots are getting,
you yes. said we're, there's no more modern age. Are we going to double up on the silver and golden?
Well, that's your
golden?
Choice. We could do that. Mm-hmm. Actually, hold on. No. Hold on. Yeah, hold on. Where's my... Oh, there's my Golden Age one. Okay. I have two... Well, I have a Golden Age and a Silver Age.
Right.
Ready. We could either do... I could do, since we have half an hour, I could do two Golden Age and two Silver Age.
No, we can do that.
All right. So first up. Okay. This is created by Bill Woolfolk and Mort Leave. It debuted in Mad Hatter number 1, OW Comics Corp, January, February 1946. Then the question is, does he wear a hat? Actually, no. The quote, "I'm really not so bad as I'm painted. By all means, let's get better acquainted." And of course, by the name of the title of the book, it's Mad Hatter.
No relation
as
to 1940s, Batman.
Right, no, as well as far as we know. Hold on. As the 1940s drew to a close, the popularity of superheroes began to wane. Future decades would prove there were still novel ideas to be had in the genre, but the boom that had immediately followed the publication of Superman made novelty a victim of plenty. Young readers were beginning to clamor for westerns, humor, and gory mystery books over the familiar cape and cowl types, flooding the racks. Nonetheless, new superheroes were being introduced with the intention of catching the jaded eye of the veteran comic book reader. Among these stood the Mad Hatter, a blonde-haired crime fighter decked out in lurid purple under a masthead declaring a new kind of comic book. What exactly is new about this comic book is a question for all the ages. The adventures of junior law partner Grant Richmond, alter ego of the crime-smashing Mad Hatter, resembled the familiar adventures of any dozen other heroes. Richmond maintained a put-upon alter ego, had a hard-nosed girl reporter as an inamorata, that's a good word, and faced off against a colorful coterie of baddies and menacing goons. You know, the usual. Which is not to say that the Mad Hatter didn't have a few unique things going for him. For one, his costume. A violet one-piece accessorized with a cape, glove, boots, and briefs tricked out in white fur. Also notable was his insignia, proudly emblazoned against a golden circle on his chest, a top hat. It's hard to suggest what sort of figure the Mad Hatter cut in his crusade against the underworld, but menacing doesn't seem to fit. The Hatter also adopted a habit of speaking in rhyme, at least when he was mopping up the bad guys. He dropped the affectation when talking with non-crooks, or sometimes when the author just forgot or couldn't be bothered. The rhyming gimmick was employed on all... on the Mad Hatter's calling cards as well, which were emblazoned with such timeless doggerel as, "Though I dream of sweets and stuff, kings and cabbages aren't enough. I must have danger too." Signed, the Mad Hatter. A few intriguing criminals lingered among the Hatter's otherwise typical parade of racketeers and mobsters. Keeping with the children's literature theme, for instance, was a corpulent Humpty Dumpty, a criminal genius hobbled by his overpowering laziness. More striking, however, was the gargoyle, in reality a mobster named Frank Farrow, whose brain had been transferred into the body of a gorilla. Okay. Donning a man suit and a lifelike rubber mask, the super crook embarked on a combination crime wave and revenge spree that sorely tested the Hatter's resolve. Yes, the obvious question about the hero is, why did he call himself the Mad Hatter? Was he possessed of hat-related gimmicks or crime-fighting chapeaus? No. Was he in some way based on the Lewis Carroll creation of the same name? Possibly. Was he, it says we he mad, it's supposed to be was he mad. Good Lord. Was he mad? Very likely. Did I mention the fuzzy white briefs? Whatever the case, with only a handful of appearances over mere two issues, oh, that's it? The Mad Hatter wasn't around long enough to answer those questions, either in rhyme or in prose. Oh, there's the editor's note. The Mad Hatter carried a signal device of some sort that allowed him to shine his insignia in the path of terrified crooks. The device, however, is never shown. How exactly the Hatter accomplished this trick and where he kept this gadget will forever be a mystery.
I know what killed the Mad Hatter. I know what killed
him. Oh, no.
Him.
Go ahead.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Pink and purple and green and orange. And, oh, fuck. No word rhymes with orange.
S'morange. I have no idea. I don't know. All right. So our next entry in the Golden Age, created by Art Pinajin, debuted in Crack Comics number 1, or Quality Comics in 1940. Okay, hold on. Alternate possible aliases, Old Lady Mortality, Grandma Death, That Nice Mrs. Vengeance from Next Door. The quote, a very touching farewell. Clever acting, I call it. And we're talking about Madam Fatal.
Or Fatal.
No, it's F-A-T-A-L.
Okay.
It's Fatal. I know. You were waiting for Fatal. Nope, it was Fatal. I was expecting the E at the end. And I was like, no, just, you know, Madame. And there's no E at the end of Madame either. That's why I said Madam. So there you go. But now the story. When actor Richard Stanton's wife passes away and his daughter is kidnapped, a heartbroken but critically acclaimed character, actor, and master of disguise simply vanishes from public life. 8 years later, Stanton is only a memory. In his place stands Adam Fatal, a little old lady who became Comicton's first cross-dressing superhero. I just put my head down when I read that out loud. Must I? Resembling something like a mix of the films Taken and Mrs. Doubtfire, help is on the way, dear. I couldn't resist that one. Madame Fatal represents one of the truly unique characters in comics. Women who disguise their gender and superhero identities were uncommon, but not unheard of. However, America's macho culture frowned on the opposite arrangement, making Madame Fatal a singular character, to say the least. Stanton's commitment to his alter ego was more than passing. As explained in his debut appearance, he built a comprehensive second life for his elderly, red-clad senior citizen identity. To Stanton's neighbors, Madame Fatal was a kindly old lady who occupied a quiet apartment with her pet parrot, Hamlet, not a superhero vigilante itching for action. Even after Stanton/Fatal confronts his daughter's abductors, he chooses to keep the disguise of Madame Fatal alive. John Carver is dead, he says of the crook, and the actor's disguise of Madame Fatal has served its purpose. But this is not enough, for I've decided that as Madame Fatal, I can't read this, man.
Drink.
It's just not right.
Drink.
Madame Fatal. All... There, I gave myself one. Madame Fatal, I'll go on fighting crime and lawlessness as long as I can. As long as I can ended up being another 21 issues of Crack Comics, during which Madame Fatal never scored a cover appearance, except for a headshot in the sidebar of the first issue, jammed between such timeless names as Wizard Wells and Ned Brandt. Lest readers fear that Stanton was in any way dainty, he was portrayed as an all-around athletic marvel in both of his identities. Stanton was an ex-soldier, a deep-sea diver, and an expert swimmer. Whereas Madame Fatal swung from rooftops, fought like a lion, and wielded a ferocious cane. As the series progressed, Carver found himself with more frequent opportunities to appear out of uniform. Eventually, he was set up in the Surefire Detective Agency with his pals Tubby White and Scrappy Nelson. Although it was Madame, God damn it, It was Madame Feely, who did most of the... God, why is it such a tongue twister tonight? The two-fisted sleuthing. After almost 2 years, the character had exhausted the shock value inherent in an apparent octogenarian knocking thugs around like ragdolls, and Madame Fatal hung up her wig and cane. Okay.
That was worth it.
Madame Fatal. Madame Fatal. My kids. Okay. So now we go to the Silver Age. I swear I've read this one. Ultra? Okay. Created by Dave Wood and Lee Elias, debuted in Mystery in Space number 103, DC Comics, November 1965. Favorite band, The Four Tops. Okay, and I'm talking, this is, okay, the quote is, I've somehow become a weird alien. Four of them. This is Ultra, the multi-alien. In the mid-1960s, the space race between the United States and the Soviet Union was very much on the minds of, well, everyone. Sputnik, Yuri Gagarin, and space dog Laika were practically ancient history. The moon landing was still a half decade away, and so the two great superpowers were competing to rack up as many interstellar, quote-unquote, firsts as possible and come out on top. It only makes sense that superheroes would make a race for space as well. Notable crime busters who frequented DC's comics of the era included the Flash Gordon-esque Adam Strange, Space Adventurers, the Star Rovers, Futuristic Mystery Man Space Ranger, Space Detective Star Hawkins, and Space Cabby. Yes, outer space was so intriguing that even the cab drivers led interesting lives. But the weirdest of all was Ultra, the multi-alien. Capturing the jet age appeal of the daring test pilot, Ultra's alter ego was the unlikely named Ace Arn, a space flyer from the not-too-distant future whose rocket crash lands on a strange alien world. Ace then stumbles across four otherworldly criminals in the middle of an arms deal and becomes a simultaneous victim of the questionable quartet's strange ray guns. See, their brand of gun was designed to transform the target into an obedient member of the shooter's alien species. How convenient. Struck by all four at once, Ace is transformed into four aliens in one, with each quarter of his body differently transmuted. His left leg becomes a blazing lightning bolt possessed of electric powers. His right leg, a feathered talon that grants him the power of flight. The right side of his upper body, along with his head, becomes a shaggy mass of powerful green muscles, and his hairless blue left side is now possessed of tremendous magnetic powers. Alien abilities notwithstanding, Ultra resembles a mixed-up box of puzzle pieces. Likewise, he assembled his superheroic pseudonym by making an acronym of his assailant's home planets, Ulla, LaRue, Traga, and Ragon. Sickles want to know about the final A is taken from Ace Arn's own initials. The newly dubbed Ultra turned tragedy into opportunity by using his tremendous powers as a scourge against intergalactic crime. Well, for a little while anyway, after 8 issues, the comic in which his story unfolded was canceled and Ultra was retired. The multi-alien is occasionally revived at parent company DC, albeit indignity heaped upon indignity, usually as the butt of a joke.
So he's teaming up with Ambush Bug.
Oh, guess what? And that's the end of the Silver Age.
Oh!
We're done with the Silver Age. Okay, I'll read one more. I promise for tonight, I'll do one more from the Golden Age.
All right.
I thought that was odd. Oh, no, I didn't. Oh, well, it's a bookmarker. All right, no big deal. All right, so this one's created by H.G. Peter. Debuted in Regular Feller's Heroic Comics number 7. Good Lord, that title. Eastern Color Printing, July 1941. Alternate unused identities. Fella O'Fire, superhero McSteel. His quote, sorry, senorita, the bullets ignited me. And we're talking about Man O'Metal.
Oh,
not all superheroes are secretly multimillionaire playboys. Quite a few crime fighters caped in cowl crusaders punch the clock as newspaper reporters, beat cops, and the like. But for a genuine blue-collar superhero, we don't get a much better example than Pat Dempsey, a.k.a. Man O'Metal. Although he sounds like a brand of silverware polish, Man of Metal is in fact a steel worker who is accidentally caught under a shower of molten steel. Rather than dying in a terrible accident, Dempsey undergoes a startling transformation. A human being, explains a caption in his introductory adventure, through an inexplainable chemical reaction of the skin texture, is being transformed into a man of metal. That's just basic science. Any school child knows that. The molten steel shower transforms Pat's skin to sleek sky blue metal and encases him in powerful flames, imparting immense strength and rendering him capable of burning his way through the thickest barriers. Seizing the opportunity, Pat's bosses at the foundry connect him with the FBI, and soon Pat Dempsey becomes a superpowered agent for the U.S. government and an occasional private eye. Man of Metal's amazing powers require the occasional recharge. Any contact with flame, significant heat, or electricity is sufficient to send Pat's skin blazing and effect his transformation into living steel. Once he cools again, he reverts to his human state. You might think Pat would carry a lighter at all times. Instead, he typically relies on happenstance and luck to trigger his powers. Over his roughly two dozen adventures, Pat manages to sneak a lucky spark from a down power line, a hot radiator, a lit cigarette, a passing car's unsuspected backfire, an acetylene torch, a frying pan full of bacon and eggs, a shovel full of hot coal, and a matchbook luckily ignited by a bullet. Oh, and also by rubbing the soles of his feet along a wall. Seriously? Man of Metal is likely based on the legend of Joe Magarac, the subject of several urban folktales that popped up among Pittsburgh steelworkers in the early 1900s, something like a Paul Bunyan of the steel industry. Magarac was a tremendously strong man made of pure metal who emerged fully formed one day from a vat of molten metal to serve as a protector of the city's steelworkers. Man of Metal was a creation of H.G. Peters, the co-creator of Wonder Woman. Presumably, when the latter series took off, Peters had less time to concentrate on his steel-jacketed creation, which explains why the unique-looking hero vanished after a few years of waging a blazing battle against crime. And there you have it, folks. I didn't do the intro for this. And these were half-baked heroes from the comic book history, the League of Regrettable Superheroes. Starting next week, until we're done, all Golden Age. Oh, the fun we'll have with the Golden Age ones, because anything's possible with them. Those silly Golden Age people.
And we've had some prize winners.
Oh, the best was that wizard who was like more like a villain than I. How many more do we have? One, two, three. Oh, hold on a minute. I read a couple of these, so hold on.
Got to keep track now.
We only have 11 more to go.
Ah. And then we move on to the
unless
next
it's been
one.
So long. So yes, then we have a choice of, what was I going to say? We have a choice of supervillains or sidekicks to start us off with.
Let's go, I say villains.
Okay.
Yeah,
we'll let the villains at it in a couple weeks. That'll be in three or 4 weeks.
All right. And I already have a prediction of some of the ones that we're probably going to see.
Yeah, I don't know yet. I haven't looked at the book yet. I like to keep it fresh until. Okay.
Like I said, I can have, you know, guesses, but that's pretty much it. We won't know until it happens. All right, so quick reminder, like I said, after this show is over, I am setting up, we'll be at City Hall on Champions and in the Paragon Dawn base on City of Heroes for the anniversary of Paragon Radio. Dawn, the actual supergroup.
Right, not my show. Right, we did ours a couple weeks ago.
Right.
I do have a couple more stories. I don't think I'm going to get to all of them tonight, but... Last week, we did a few stories about the show Wednesday coming out, about Wednesday Addams of the Addams Family. Well, now there's a full Wednesday trailer, and it reveals believe it or not, Fred Armisen as Fester, Uncle Fester, and it has Christina Ricci in it. So Fred Armisen portrayed former President Obama on SNL, Brainy in the Smurfs, and now he's Uncle Fester on Netflix's Wednesday. In the full Wednesday trailer that just dropped, we get a first look at not just him, but Christina Ricci's new teacher character. As she faces off against Jenna Ortega's Wednesday Addams deadpan, it feels like the ultimate passing of the torch. The trailer also references the Barry Sonnenfeld movies in a scene where Wednesday school some kids dress as pilgrims for a Thanksgiving play. And Ortega's morbid demeanor seems just about perfect. The orchestral version of Painted Black may seem an obvious choice, but certainly an appropriate one. Considering Tim Burton is the director, the song suits especially well, as it applies to most everything he makes. And Catherine Zeta-Jones looks like she's nailed the role of Morticia. Armisen follows in the footsteps. Yes, what?
Okay, you said Tim Burton's directing this.
Yes.
All right, that tells me one thing. Johnny Depp's going to find a way in it. Tells me one thing, Johnny Depp's coming in.
With Christina Ricci, I bet he will somehow.
Yeah, you cannot have a Tim Burton without Johnny Depp. It's in the rules.
It's there. I bet he's going to be there. And Armisen does follow in the footsteps of Christopher Lloyd, which are mighty big, though he seems to channel original TV actor Jackie Coogan more. See, that's the Fester I remember.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Wednesday premieres November 23rd. On Netflix. And I have to read this one because we have time. The Doctor's Time is Up in Doctor Who, The Power of the Doctor trailer. In Doctor Who, there's only one constant among the Doctors. Everything changes. Since the revival series began in 2005, fans have witnessed fan-favorite Doctors played by Christopher Eccleston, David Tennant, Matt Smith, and Peter Capaldi take part in one final adventure before regenerating into their successor. Now, it's the 13th Doctor's turn to say goodbye. Jodie Whittaker's final appearance in the role will be the upcoming special, Doctor Who, The Power of the Doctor. In a New York Comic Con, fans got a glimpse at what's to come in a new trailer. Curiously, one of the Daleks has warned the Doctor that his race will soon invade the Earth. This coincides with the disappearance of prominent seismologists around the world, and has all the makings of a trap. Additionally, the Master, played by Sacha Dhawan, seems to confirm this when he tells the Doctor that this is the day that she will be erased from existence. If that wasn't enough, the Cybermen are also involved in this assault on the Doctor that takes place in multiple times. Even a Time Lord or a Time Lady can only handle so much. All we know for sure is that this will be the 13th Doctor's final battle, but not the Doctor's. As previously announced, Sex Education's Nkodi Gatwa has been cast as the 14th Doctor, and he will make his first appearance in the role once Whittaker's Doctor surrenders the stage. Doctor Who, The Power of the Doctor. I think it's Nkodi Gatwa.
Spell that.
N-C-U-T-I.
N-C-U-T-I. That's actually type the N. N-C-U-T-I.
N-C-U-T-I.
Okay.
Nkodi.
Mm-hmm.
Nkodi?
Looking at him Got right one? Now.
Okay. Is there a pronunciation guy next to his name?
Not that I see.
Okay. Anyway, Doctor Who, The Power of the Doctor, will premiere on October 23rd. There you go. See, I thought it wasn't going to premiere until like Christmas, you know, like December. Well, that's pretty, that's in a couple of weeks. That's like in 2 weeks.
There we go. Mzero Nkodi Gatwa is a Rwandan Scottish actor.
Okay, there you go. Oh, I did want to read this one about Doom Patrol.
You got 5 minutes.
Okay. So, now, do you remember the Weird Butts from Doom Patrol? Now the Werebutts are singing Doom Patrol Season 4 teaser. If anyone ever tries to tell you that all comic book movies and TV shows are the same, here's irrefutable evidence to the contrary. Besides Doom Patrol, no other show has butt monsters that sing barbershop tunes, period. Though if any others dare to try, let them. The Doom Patrol Season 4 teaser brings back the Werebutts. But this time, it looks like we'll learn their actual origins. And they'll sing, which doesn't necessarily make them less dangerous, since singers can be real jerks, too. And there's a trailer for it. Other than the butts and a certain conspicuous laser crotch, oh, good Lord, the teaser doesn't offer a lot of new hints. But at least we know that for now, rumors of cancellation in order to support a more unified DCEU have been premature. That doesn't mean it's safe forever, but at least the fourth season is guaranteed. Negative Man, Cyborg, Rita Farr, Robot Man, and Crazy Jane's newest adventures kick off starting December 8th. With Brendan Fraser's other DCEU role as Firefly, Batgirl, locked in the vault, and Ray Fisher unlikely to return as Cyborg, Jovian Wade and Fraser's Robot Man could comfortably fold into the shared reality post-Flashpoint, if the powers that be want that.
So we have Werebutts, and what was the other one?
A laser crotch?
Laser crotch.
Hold on.
Where's Mark Hamill? Where is Mark Hamill? We need cockknockers.
It's a certain conspicuous laser crotch.
We need cockknocker. Come on. Get Mark Hamill another shot. Come on. How'd you get that name?
Wow, I was AFS.
Funny you should mention that. It's like...
Ash Wednesday, Bot Monsters singing Barbershop ODG. Yes, I know. So the trail will go up on the Paragon Radio Facebook page later on.
And Wolfgang's going, yes! I guess he wants cockknocker.
I don't know. Maybe he wants the Werebutts. And it's appropriate that Ash Wednesday has joined us because she kind of looks like Wednesday from the series that we just talked about a few moments ago. Well, there you go.
All right. Well, 2 minutes
okay,
to go.
So we've got 2 minutes left. Okay, let's do our closings. I want to thank everybody for tuning in tonight. If you guys weren't here, me and Mad Viking would be talking about this stuff anyway, just to ourselves. And what's the fun of that when we could share with all you good people out there? Tune in, watch those superhero movies, superhero TV shows, Werewolf by Midnight, I said earlier. You got to check it out. It's really good. Watch with the lights out. It's in black. Also, if you're into She-Hulk, the season finale is coming up this Thursday already. I checked out one episode of Andor. It looks pretty cool. And I think the Rings of Power, the War of the Rings series, their season finale is this week already. I still have to check that one out, too. So I can't say anything about that one. My stepbrother keeps going, it's really good. You guys rock. With that. Anything else I got to say? Watch those read those comic books. Read those superhero novels if you have any. Have a good week, everybody. Mad Viking, anything you'd like to say in closing?
Say goodnight, Gracie.
Goodnight, Gracie. And don't forget, stick around for go to dawnradio.live right after this show. It's the 10th anniversary of Paragon Dawn. Where else would you rather be? Except in the Paragon Dawn base in City of Heroes and City Hall in Champions Online in the Gold Room to celebrate with us.
Got to go back to the
Radio Live. Dawn Radio Live, embrace the dawn. Well, okay, we still have 25 seconds left, so.
Who knows? We may have some special appearances once news gets out and people start to, hey!
Yeah, all right, we got 9 seconds, so everybody start heading over. It's okay. We had our fun. I'm going to head over. This show's over in like 2 seconds. I'm going to start heading over myself.
See ya.
See you over there. Ending the show now. Mad Viking, take it away on dawnradio.live. Goodbye, everybody. See you next Monday night for more Paragon Radio. See you super. Ending now.